that individuals were far more ravenous when sleeping 4 to 5 hours a night. This despite being given the same amount of food and being similarly active, which kept the hunger levels of these same individuals under calm control when they were getting 8 or more hours of sleep. The strong rise of hunger pangs and increased reported appetite occurred rapidly, by just the second day of short sleeping. At fault were the two characters, leptin and ghrelin. Inadequate sleep decreased concentrations of the satiety-signaling hormone leptin and increased levels of the hunger-instigating hormone ghrelin. It was a classic case of physiological double jeopardy. Participants were being punished twice for the same offense of short sleeping. Once by having the I'm full signal removed from their system, and once by gaining the I'm still hungry feeling being amplified. As a result, participants just didn't feel satisfied by food when they were short sleeping. From a metabolic perspective, the sleep-restricted participants had lost their hunger control. By limiting these individuals to what some in our society would think of as a sufficient amount of sleep, 5 hours a night, Van Carter had caused a profound imbalance in the scales of hormonal food desire. By muting the chemical message that says, stop eating, leptin, yet increasing the hormonal voice that shouts, please keep eating, ghrelin, your appetite remains unsatisfied when your sleep is anything less than plentiful, even after a kingly meal. As Van Carter has elegantly described to me, a sleep-deprived body will cry famine in the midst of plenty. But feeling hungry and actually eating more are not the same thing. Do you actually eat more when sleeping less? Does your waistline really swell as a consequence of that rise in appetite? With another landmark study, Van Carter proved this to be the case. Participants in this experiment again underwent two different conditions, acting as their own baseline control. 4 nights of 8.5 hours time in bed, and 4 nights of 4.5 hours time in bed. Each day, participants were limited to the same level of physical activity under both conditions. Each day they were given free access to food, and the researchers meticulously counted the difference in calorie consumption between the two experimental manipulations. When short sleeping, the very same individuals ate 300 calories more each day, or well over 1,000 calories before the end of the experiment, compared to when they were routinely getting a full night of sleep. Similar changes occur if you give people 5 to 6 hours of sleep over a 10-day period. Scale that up to a working year, and assuming 1 month of vacation in which sleep miraculously becomes abundant, and you will still have consumed more than 70,000 extra calories. Based on caloric estimates, that would cause 10 to 15 pounds of weight gain a year, each and every year, which may sound painfully familiar to many of us. Van Carter's next experiment was the most surprising and devilish of all. Fit, healthy individuals went through the same two different conditions as before. 4 nights of 8.5 hours time in bed, and 4 nights of 4.5 hours time in bed. However, on the last day of each of the experimental conditions, something different happened. Participants were offered an additional food buffet, stretched across a 4-hour period. Set out in front of them was an assortment of foods, from meats, vegetables, bread, potatoes, and salad, to fruit and ice cream. Set to one side, however, was access to a bonus snack bar filled with cookies, chocolate bars, chips, and pretzels. Participants could eat as much as they wanted in the 4-hour period, with the buffet even being replenished halfway through. Importantly, the subjects ate alone, limiting social or stigmatizing influences that could alter their natural eating urges. Following the buffet, Van Carter and her team once again quantified what participants ate and how much they ate. Despite eating almost 2,000 calories during the buffet lunch, sleep-deprived participants dove into the snack bar. They consumed an additional 330 calories of snack foods after the full meal, compared to when they were getting plenty of sleep each night. Of relevance to this behavior is a recent discovery that sleep loss increases levels of circulating endocannabinoids, which, as you may have guessed from the name, are chemicals produced by the body that are very similar to the drug cannabis. Like marijuana use, these chemicals stimulate appetite and increase your desire to snack, otherwise known as having the munchies. Combine this increase in endocannabinoids with alterations in leptin and ghrelin caused by sleep deprivation, and you have a potent brew of chemical messages, all driving you in one direction: overeating. Some argue that we eat more when we are sleep-deprived because we burn extra calories when we stay awake. Sadly, this is not true. In the sleep restriction experiments described above, there are no differences in caloric expenditure between the two conditions. Take it to the extreme by sleep-depriving an individual for 24 hours straight, and they will only burn an extra 147 calories relative to a 24-hour period containing a full 8 hours of sleep. Sleep, it turns out, is an intensely metabolically active state for brain and body alike. For this reason, theories proposing that we sleep to conserve large amounts of energy are no longer entertained. The paltry caloric savings are insufficient to outweigh the survival dangers and disadvantages associated with falling asleep. More importantly, the extra calories that you eat when sleep-deprived far outweigh any nominal extra energy you burn while remaining awake. Making matters worse, the less an individual sleeps, the less energy he or she feels they have, and the more sedentary and less willing to exercise they are in real-world settings. Inadequate sleep is the perfect recipe for obesity. Greater calorie intake, lower calorie expenditure. Weight gain caused by short sleep is not just a matter of eating more, but also a change in what you binge eat. Looking across the different studies, Van Carter noticed that cravings for sweets, for example cookies, chocolate and ice cream, heavy-hitting carbohydrate-rich foods, for example bread and pasta, and salty snacks, for example potato chips and pretzels, all increased by 30-40% when sleep was reduced by several hours each night. Less affected were protein-rich foods, for example meat and fish, dairy items, such as yogurt and cheese, and fatty foods, showing a 10-15% increase in preference by the sleepy participants. Why is it that we lust after quick-fix sugars and complex carbohydrates when sleep-deprived? My research team and I decided to conduct a study in which we scanned people's brains while they were viewing and choosing food items, and then rated how much they desired each one. We hypothesized that changes within the brain may help explain this unhealthy shift in food preference caused by a lack of sleep. Was there a breakdown in impulse control regions that normally keep our basic hedonic food desires in check, making us reach for donuts or pizza rather than whole grains and leafy greens? Healthy, average-weight participants performed the experiment twice, once when they had had a full night of sleep, and once after they had been sleep-deprived for a night. In each of the two conditions, they viewed 80 similar food images, ranging from fruits and vegetables, such as strawberries, apples, and carrots, to high-calorie items, such as ice cream, pasta, and donuts. To ensure that participants were making choices that reflected their true cravings, rather than simply choosing items that they thought would be the right or most appropriate choice, we forced an incentive. After they came out of the MRI machine, we gave them a serving of the food they told us they most craved during the task, and politely asked them to eat it. Comparing the patterns of brain activity between the two conditions within the same individual, we discovered that supervisory regions in the prefrontal cortex, required for thoughtful judgments and controlled decisions, had been silenced in their activity by a lack of sleep. In contrast, the more primal, deep brain structures that drive motivations and desire were amplified in response to the food images. This shift to a more primitive pattern of brain activity without deliberative control came with a change in the participants' food choices. High-calorie foods became significantly more desirable in the eyes of the participants when sleep-deprived. When we tallied up the extra food items that participants wanted when they were sleep-deprived, it amounted to an extra 600 calories. The encouraging news is that getting enough sleep will help you control body weight. We found that a full night of sleep repairs the communication pathway between deep brain areas that unleash hedonic desires and higher-order brain regions whose job it is to rein in these cravings. Ample sleep can therefore restore a system of impulse control within your brain, putting the appropriate brakes on potentially excessive eating. South of the brain, we are also discovering that plentiful sleep makes your gut happier. Sleep's role in redressing the balance of the body's nervous system, especially its calming of the fight-or-flight sympathetic branch, improves the bacterial community known as your microbiome, which is located in your gut, also known as the enteric nervous system. As we learned about earlier, when you do not get enough sleep and the body's stress-related fight-or-flight nervous system is revved up, this triggers an excess of circulating cortisol that cultivates bad bacteria to fester throughout your microbiome. As a result, insufficient sleep will prevent the meaningful absorption of all food nutrients and cause gastrointestinal problems. Of course, the obesity epidemic that has engulfed large portions of the world is not caused by lack of sleep alone. The rise in consumption of processed foods, an increase in serving sizes, and the more sedentary nature of human beings are all triggers. However, these changes are insufficient to explain the dramatic escalation of obesity. Other factors must be at play. Based on evidence gathered over the past 3 decades, the epidemic of insufficient sleep is very likely a key contributor to the epidemic of obesity. Epidemiological studies have established that people who sleep less are the same individuals who are more likely to be overweight or obese. Indeed, as you can see in Figure 13 in the accompanying PDF, if you simply plot the reduction in sleep time, dotted line, over the past 50 years, on the same graph as the rise in obesity rates across the same time period, solid line, the data infer this relationship clearly. We are now observing these effects very early in life. 3-year-olds sleeping just 10.5 hours or less have a 45% increased risk of being obese by age 7 than those who get 12 hours of sleep a night. To set our children on a pathway of ill health this early in life by way of sleep neglect is a travesty. A final comment on trying to lose weight. Let's say that you choose to go on a strict, low-calorie diet for 2 weeks, in the hopes of losing fat and looking more trim and toned as a consequence. That's precisely what researchers did to a group of overweight men and women who stayed in a medical center for an entire fortnight. However, one group of individuals were given just 5.5 hours time in bed, while the other group were offered 8.5 hours time in bed. Although weight loss occurred under both conditions, the type of weight loss came from very different sources. When given just 5.5 hours of sleep opportunity, more than 70% of the pounds lost came from lean body mass, muscle, not fat. Switch to the group offered 8.5 hours time in bed each night, and a far more desirable outcome was observed, with well over 50% of weight loss coming from fat while preserving muscle. When you are not getting enough sleep, the body becomes especially stingy about giving up fat. Instead, muscle mass is depleted, while fat is retained. Lean and toned is unlikely to be the outcome of dieting when you are cutting sleep short. The latter is counterproductive of the former. The upshot of all this work can be summarized as follows. Short sleep, of the type that many adults in first world countries commonly and routinely report, will increase hunger and appetite, compromise impulse control within the brain, increase food consumption, especially of high-calorie foods, decrease feelings of food satisfaction after eating, and prevent effective weight loss when dieting. sleep loss, and the reproductive system. If you have hopes of reproductive success, fitness, or prowess, you would do well to get a full night's sleep every night. Charles Darwin would, I'm sure, cleave easily to this advice, had he reviewed the evidence I now present. Take a group of lean, healthy young males in their mid-twenties and limit them to 5 hours of sleep for 1 week, as a research group did at the University of Chicago. Sample the hormone levels circulating in the blood of these tired participants, and you will find a marked drop in testosterone relative to their own baseline levels of testosterone when fully rested. The size of the hormonal blunting effect is so large that it effectively ages a man by 10 to 15 years in terms of testosterone virility. The experimental results support the finding that men suffering from sleep disorders, especially sleep apnea associated with snoring, have significantly lower levels of testosterone than those of similar age and backgrounds, but who do not suffer from a sleep condition. Uttering the results of such studies will often quell any vocal alpha males that I occasionally come across when giving public lectures. As you may imagine, their ardent anti-sleep stance becomes a little wobbly upon receiving such information. With a genuine lack of malice, I proceed to inform them that men who report sleeping too little or having poor quality sleep have a 29% lower sperm count than those obtaining a full and restful night of sleep, and the sperm themselves have more deformities. I usually conclude my response with a parenthetical low blow, noting that these underslept men also have significantly smaller testicles than well-rested counterparts. Rare podium fracas aside, low testosterone is a clinically concerning and life-impacting matter. Males with low testosterone often feel tired and fatigued throughout the day. They find it difficult to concentrate on work tasks, as testosterone has a sharpening effect on the brain's ability to focus. And, of course, they have a dulled libido, making an active, fulfilling, and healthy sex life more challenging. Indeed, the self-reported mood and vigor of the young men described in the above study progressively decreased in lockstep with their increasing state of sleep deprivation and their declining levels of testosterone. Add to this the fact that testosterone maintains bone density and plays a causal role in building muscle mass and therefore strength, and you can begin to get a sense of why a full night of sleep and the natural hormonal replacement therapy it provides is so essential to this aspect of health and an active life for men of all ages. Men are not the only ones who become reproductively compromised by a lack of sleep. Routinely sleeping less than 6 hours a night results in a 20% drop in follicular-releasing hormone in women, a critical female reproductive element that peaks just prior to ovulation and is necessary for conception. In a report that brought together findings from studies over the past 40 years of more than 100,000 employed women, those working irregular nighttime hours resulting in poor quality sleep, such as nurses who performed shift work, a profession occupied almost exclusively by women at the time of these earlier studies, had a 33% higher rate of abnormal menstrual cycles than those working regular daytime hours. Moreover, the women working erratic hours were 80% more likely to suffer from issues of subfertility that reduced the ability to get pregnant. Women who do become pregnant and routinely sleep less than 8 hours a night are also significantly more likely to suffer a miscarriage in the first trimester, relative to those consistently sleeping 8 hours or more a night. Combine these deleterious effects on reproductive health in a couple where both parties are lacking in sleep, and it's easy to appreciate why the epidemic of sleep deprivation is linked to infertility or subfertility, and why Darwin would find these results so meaningful in the context of future evolutionary success. Incidentally, should you ask Dr. Tina Sundelin, my friend and colleague at Stockholm University, how attractive you look when sleep-deprived, a physical expression of underlying biology that alters your chances of pair bonding and thus reproduction, she will inform you of an ugly truth. Sundelin isn't the only one doing the judging in this scientific beauty contest. Rather, she conducted an elegant experiment in which members of the public did that for her. Sundaline took a group of healthy men and women, ranging from 18 to 31 years old. They were all photographed twice under identical indoor lighting conditions, same time of day, 2:30 p.m., hair down, no makeup for the women, clean-shaven for the men. What differed, however, was the amount of sleep these individuals were allowed to get before each of the photo shoots. In one of the sessions, the participants were given just 5 hours of sleep before being put in front of the camera, while in the other session, these same individuals got a full 8 hours of sleep. The order of these two conditions was randomized as either first or second across the unwitting models. She brought another group of participants into the laboratory to act as independent judges. These individuals were naive to the true purpose of the experiment, knowing nothing about the two different sleep manipulations that had been imposed on the people featured in the photographs. The judges viewed both sets of the pictures in a jumbled order and were asked to give ratings on three features: perceived health, tiredness, and attractiveness. Despite knowing nothing about the underlying premise of the study, thus operating blind to the different sleep conditions, the judges' scores were unambiguous. The faces pictured after one night of short sleep were rated as looking more fatigued, less healthy, and significantly less attractive, compared with the appealing image of that same individual after they had slept a full 8 hours. Sundaline had revealed the true face of sleep loss, and with it, ratified the long-held concept of beauty sleep. What we can learn from this still burgeoning area of research is that key aspects of the human reproductive system are affected by sleep in both men and women. Reproductive hormones, reproductive organs, and the very nature of physical attractiveness that has a say in reproductive opportunities all are degraded by short sleeping. One can only imagine Narcissus being a solid 8 to 9 hour sleeper on the basis of the latter association, perhaps with an afternoon nap for good measure, taken beside the reflection pool. Sleep loss and the immune system. Recall the last time you had the flu. Miserable, wasn't it? Runny nose, aching bones, sore throat, heavy cough, and a total lack of energy. You probably just wanted to curl up in bed and sleep. As well you should. Your body is trying to sleep itself well. An intimate and bidirectional association exists between your sleep and your immune system. Sleep fights against infection and sickness by deploying all manner of weaponry within your immune arsenal, cladding you with protection. When you do fall ill, the immune system actively stimulates the sleep system, demanding more bed rest to help reinforce the war effort. Reduce sleep even for a single night, and that invisible suit of immune resilience is rudely stripped from your body. Short of inserting rectal probes to measure core body temperature in certain sleep research studies, my good colleague, Dr. Eric Prather, at the University of California, San Francisco, has performed one of the most feted sleep experiments that I am aware of. He measured the sleep of more than 150 healthy men and women for a week using a wristwatch device. Then he quarantined them and proceeded to squirt a good dose of rhinovirus, or a live culture of the common cold virus, straight up their noses. I should note that all participants knew about this ahead of time and had surprisingly given full consent to this snout abuse. Once the flu virus had been satisfactorily boosted up the nostrils of the participants, Prather then kept them in the laboratory for the following week, monitoring them intensely. He not only assessed the extent of immune reaction by taking frequent samples of blood and saliva, but he also gathered nearly every glob of nasal mucus that the participants produced. Prather had the participants regimentally blow their noses, and every drop of the product was bagged, tagged, weighed, and analytically pored over by his research team. Using these measures, blood and saliva immune antibodies, together with the average amount of snot evacuated by the participants, Prather could determine whether someone had objectively caught a cold. Prather retrospectively separated the participants into four subgroups on the basis of how much sleep they had obtained in the week before being exposed to the common cold virus. Less than 5 hours of sleep, 5 to 6 hours of sleep, 6 to 7 hours of sleep, and 7 or more hours of sleep. There was a clear, linear relationship with infection rate. The less sleep an individual was getting in the week before facing the active common cold virus, the more likely it was that they would be infected and catch a cold. In those sleeping 5 hours on average, the infection rate was almost 50%. In those sleeping 7 hours or more a night in the week prior, the infection rate was just 18%. Considering that infectious illnesses such as the common cold, influenza, and pneumonia are among the leading causes of death in developed countries, doctors and governments would do well to stress the critical importance of sufficient sleep during the flu season. Perhaps you are one of the responsible individuals who will get a flu shot each year, boosting your own resilience while adding strength to the immunity of the herd, your community. However, that flu shot is only effective if your body actually reacts to it by generating antibodies. A remarkable discovery in 2002 demonstrated that sleep profoundly impacts your response to a standard flu vaccine. In the study, healthy young adults were separated into two groups. One had their sleep restricted to 4 hours a night for 6 nights, and the other group was allowed 7.5 to 8.5 hours of time in bed each night. At the end of the 6 days, everyone was given a flu shot. In the days afterward, researchers took blood samples to determine how effective these individuals were in generating an antibody response, determining whether or not the vaccination was a success. Those participants who obtained 7 to 9 hours sleep in the week before getting the flu shot generated a powerful antibody reaction, reflecting a robust, healthy immune system. In contrast, those in the sleep-restricted group mustered a paltry response, producing less than 50% of the immune reaction their well-slept counterparts were able to mobilize. Similar consequences of too little sleep have since been reported for the hepatitis A and B vaccines. Perhaps the sleep-deprived individuals could still go on to produce a more robust immune reaction if only they were given enough recovery sleep time. It's a nice idea, but a false one. Even if an individual is allowed 2 or even 3 weeks of recovery sleep to get over the assault of 1 week of short sleeping, they never go on to develop a full immune reaction to the flu shot. In fact, a diminution in certain immune cells could still be observed a year later in the participants after just a minor, short dose of sleep restriction. As with the effects of sleep deprivation on memory, once you miss out on the benefit of sleep in the moment, here regarding an immune response to this season's flu, you cannot regain the benefit simply by trying to catch up on lost sleep. The damage is done, and some of that harm can still be measured a year later. No matter what immunological circumstance you find yourself in, be it preparation for receiving a vaccine to help boost immunity, or mobilizing a mighty adaptive immune response to defeat a viral attack, sleep, and a full night of it, is inviolable. It doesn't require many nights of short sleeping before the body is rendered immunologically weak, and here the issue of cancer becomes relevant. Natural killer cells are an elite and powerful squadron within the ranks of your immune system. Think of natural killer cells like the secret service agents of your body, whose job it is to identify dangerous foreign elements and eliminate them, 007 types, if you will. One such foreign entity that natural killer cells will target are malignant, cancerous tumor cells. Natural killer cells will effectively punch a hole in the outer surface of these cancerous cells and inject a protein that can destroy the malignancy. What you want, therefore, is a viral set of these James Bond-like immune cells at all times. That is precisely what you don't have when sleeping too little. Dr. Michael Irwin at the University of California, Los Angeles, has performed landmark studies revealing just how quickly and comprehensively A brief dose of short sleep can affect your cancer-fighting immune cells. Examining healthy young men, Irwin demonstrated that a single night of 4 hours of sleep, such as going to bed at 3 a.m. and waking up at 7 a.m., swept away 70% of the natural killer cells circulating in the immune system relative to a full 8-hour night of sleep. That is a dramatic state of immune deficiency to find yourself facing, and it happens quickly after essentially one bad night of sleep. You could well imagine the enfeebled state of your cancer-fighting immune armory after a week of short sleep, let alone months or even years. We don't have to imagine. A number of prominent epidemiological studies have reported that nighttime shift work and the disruption to circadian rhythms and sleep that it causes up your odds of developing numerous different forms of cancer considerably. To date, these include associations with cancer of the breast, cancer of the prostate, cancer of the uterus wall or the endometrium, and cancer of the colon. Stirred by the strength of accumulating evidence, Denmark recently became the first country to pay worker compensation to women who had developed breast cancer after years of night shift work in government-sponsored jobs, such as nurses and air cabin crew. Other governments, Britain for example, have so far resisted similar legal claims, refusing payout compensation despite the science. With each passing year of research, more forms of malignant tumors are being linked to insufficient sleep. A large European study of almost 25,000 individuals demonstrated that sleeping 6 hours or less was associated with a 40% increased risk of developing cancer, relative to those sleeping 7 hours a night or more. Similar associations were found in a study tracking more than 75,000 women across an 11-year period. Exactly how and why short sleep causes cancer is also becoming clear. Part of the problem relates back to the agitating influence of the sympathetic nervous system, as it is forced into overdrive by a lack of sleep. Ramping up the body's level of sympathetic nervous activity will provoke an unnecessary and sustained inflammation response from the immune system. When faced with a real threat, a brief spike of sympathetic nervous system activity will often trigger a similarly transient response from inflammatory activity, one that is useful in anticipation of potential bodily harm. Think of a physical tussle with a wild animal or rival hominid tribe. However, inflammation has a dark side. Left switched on without a natural return to peaceful quiescence, a nonspecific state of chronic inflammation causes manifold health problems, including those relevant to cancer. Cancers are known to use the inflammation response to their advantage. For example, some cancer cells will lure inflammatory factors into the tumor mass to help initiate the growth of blood vessels that feed it with more nutrients and oxygen. Tumors can also use inflammatory factors to help further damage and mutate the DNA of their cancer cells, increasing the tumor's potency. Inflammatory factors associated with sleep deprivation may also be used to help physically shear some of the tumor from its local moorings, allowing the cancer to up anchor and spread to other territories of the body. It is a state called metastasis, the medical term for the moment when cancer breaches the original tissue boundaries of origin, here the injection site, and begins to appear in other regions of the body. It is these cancer-amplifying and spreading processes that we now know a lack of sleep will encourage, as recent studies by Dr. David Gozal at the University of Chicago have shown. In his study, mice were first injected with malignant cells, and tumor progression was then tracked across a 4-week period. Half of the mice were allowed to sleep normally during this time. The other half had their sleep partially disrupted, reducing overall sleep quality. The sleep-deprived mice suffered a 200% increase in the speed and size of cancer growth relative to the well-rested group. Painful as it is for me personally to view, I will often show comparison pictures of the size of these mouse tumors in the two experimental groups, sleep versus sleep restriction, during my public talks. Without fail, these images elicit audible gasps, hands reflexively covering mouths, and some people turning away from the images of mountainous tumors growing from the sleep-restricted mice. I then have to describe the only news that could be worse in any story of cancer. When Gozal performed post-mortems of the mice, he discovered that the tumors were far more aggressive in the sleep-deficient animals. Their cancer had metastasized, spreading to surrounding organs, tissue, and bone. Modern medicine is increasingly adept in its treatment of cancer when it stays put, but when cancer metastasizes, as was powerfully encouraged by the state of sleep deprivation, medical intervention often becomes helplessly ineffective, and death rates escalate. In the years since that experiment, Gozal has further drawn back the curtains of sleep deprivation to reveal the mechanisms responsible for this malignant state of affairs. In a number of studies, Gozal has shown that immune cells, called tumor-associated macrophages, are one root cause of the cancerous influence of sleep loss. He found that sleep deprivation will diminish one form of these macrophages, called M1 cells, that otherwise help combat cancer. Yet sleep deprivation conversely boosts levels of an alternative form of macrophages, called M2 cells, which promote cancer growth. This combination helped explain the devastating carcinogenic effects seen in the mice when their sleep was disturbed. Poor sleep quality, therefore, increases the risk of cancer development and, if cancer is established, provides a virulent fertilizer for its rapid and more rampant growth. Not getting sufficient sleep when fighting a battle against cancer can be likened to pouring gasoline on an already aggressive fire. That may sound alarmist, but the scientific evidence linking sleep disruption and cancer is now so damning that the World Health Organization has officially classified nighttime shift work as a probable carcinogen. Sleep loss, genes and DNA. If increasing your risk for developing Alzheimer's disease, cancer, diabetes, depression, obesity, hypertension, and cardiovascular disease weren't sufficiently disquieting, chronic sleep loss will erode the very essence of biological life itself, your genetic code and the structures that encapsulate it. Each cell in your body has an inner core, or nucleus. Within that nucleus resides most of your genetic material in the form of deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA, molecules. DNA molecules form beautiful helical strands, like tall spiral staircases in an opulent home. Segments of these spirals provide specific engineering blueprints that instruct your cells to perform particular functions. These distinct segments are called genes. Rather like double-clicking open a Word file on your computer and then sending it to your printer, when genes are activated and read by the cell, a biological product is printed out, such as the creation of an enzyme that helps with digestion, or a protein that helps strengthen a memory circuit within the brain. Anything that causes a shimmy or wobble in gene stability can have consequences. Erroneously over- or underexpressing particular genes can cause biologically printed products that raise your risk of disease, such as dementia, cancer, cardiovascular ill health, and immune dysfunction. Enter the destabilizing force of sleep deprivation. Thousands of genes within the brain depend upon consistent and sufficient sleep for their stable regulation. Deprive a mouse of sleep for just a day, as researchers have done, and the activity of these genes will drop by well over 200%. Like a stubborn file that refuses to be transcribed by a printer, when you do not lavish these DNA segments with enough sleep, they will not translate their instructional code into printed action and give the brain and body what they need. Dr. Dirk Jan Dyke, who directs the Surrey Sleep Research Centre in England, has shown that the effects of insufficient sleep on genetic activity are just as striking in humans as they are in mice. Dyke and his prolific team examined gene expression in a group of healthy young men and women after having restricted them to 6 hours of sleep a night for 1 week, all monitored under strict laboratory conditions. After 1 week of subtly reduced sleep, the activity of a hefty 711 genes was distorted, relative to the genetic activity profile of these very same individuals when they were obtaining 8.5 hours of sleep for a week. Interestingly, the effect went in both directions. About half of those 711 genes had been abnormally revved up in their expression by the loss of sleep, while the other half had been diminished in their expression, or shut down entirely. The genes that were increased included those linked to chronic inflammation, cellular stress, and various factors that cause cardiovascular disease. Among those turned down were genes that help maintain stable metabolism and optimal immune responses. Subsequent studies have found that short sleep duration will also disrupt the activity of genes regulating cholesterol. In particular, a lack of sleep will cause a drop in high-density lipoproteins, HDLs, a directional profile that has consistently been linked to cardiovascular disease. Footnote. Beyond a simple lack of sleep, Dyke's research team has further shown that inappropriately timed sleep, such as that imposed by jet lag or shift work, can have equally large effects on the expression of human genes as inadequate sleep. By pushing forward an individual's sleep-wake cycle by a few hours each day for 3 days, Dyke disrupted a massive 1/3 of the transcribing activity of the genes in a group of young, healthy adults. Once again, the genes that were impacted controlled elemental life processes, such as the timing of metabolic, thermoregulatory, and immune activity, as well as cardiac health. Insufficient sleep does more than alter the activity and readout of your genes. It attacks the very physical structure of your genetic material itself. The spiral strands of DNA in your cells float around in the nucleus, but are tightly wound together into structures called chromosomes, rather like weaving individual threads together to make a sturdy shoelace. And just like a shoelace, the ends of your chromosomes need to be protected by a cap or binding tip. For chromosomes, that protective cap is called a telomere. If the telomeres at the end of your chromosomes become damaged, your DNA spirals become exposed, and your now vulnerable genetic code cannot operate properly, like a fraying shoelace without a tip. The less sleep an individual obtains, or the worse the quality of sleep, the more damaged the capstone telomeres of that individual's chromosomes. These are the findings of a collection of studies that have recently been reported in thousands of adults in their 40s, 50s, and 60s by numerous independent research teams around the world. Whether this association is causal remains to be determined. But the particular nature of the telomere damage caused by short sleeping is now becoming clear. It appears to mimic that seen in aging or advanced decrepitude. That is, two individuals of the same chronological age would not appear to be of the same biological age on the basis of their telomere health if one was routinely sleeping 5 hours a night while the other was sleeping 7 hours a night. The latter would appear younger, while the former would artificially have aged far beyond their calendar years. Genetic engineering of animals and genetically modified food are fraught topics, layered thick with strong emotions. DNA occupies a transcendent, near-divine position in the minds of many individuals, liberal and conservative alike. On this basis, we should feel just as averse and uncomfortable about our own lack of sleep. Not sleeping enough, which for a portion of the population is a voluntary choice, significantly modifies your gene transcriptome, that is, the very essence of you, or at least you as defined biologically by your DNA. Neglect sleep, and you are deciding to perform a genetic engineering manipulation on yourself each night, tampering with the nucleic alphabet that spells out your daily health story. Permit the same in your children and teenagers, and you are imposing a similar genetic engineering experiment on them as well. Part 3. How and Why We Dream. Chapter 9. Routinely Psychotic. REM Sleep Dreaming. Last night, you became flagrantly psychotic. It will happen again tonight. Before you reject this diagnosis, allow me to offer 5 justifying reasons. First, when you were dreaming last night, you started to see things that were not there. You were hallucinating. Second, you believed things that could not possibly be true. You were delusional. Third, you became confused about time, place, and person. You were disoriented. Fourth, you had extreme swings in your emotions, something psychiatrists call being effectively labile. Fifth, and how delightful, you woke up this morning and forgot most, if not all, of this bizarre dream experience. You were suffering from amnesia. If you were to experience any of these symptoms while awake, you'd be seeking immediate psychological treatment. Yet for reasons that are only now becoming clear, the brain state called REM sleep and the mental experience that goes along with it, dreaming, are normal biological and psychological processes, and truly essential ones, as we shall learn. REM sleep is not the only time during sleep when we dream. Indeed, if you use a liberal definition of dreaming as any mental activity reported upon awakening from sleep, such as, "I was thinking about rain," then you technically dream in all stages of sleep. If I wake you from the deepest stage of NREM sleep, there is a 0 to 20% chance you will report some type of bland thought like this. As you are falling asleep or exiting sleep, the dreamlike experiences you have tend to be visually or movement-based. But dreams, as most of us think of them, those hallucinogenic, motoric, emotional, and bizarre experiences with a rich narrative, come from REM sleep, and many sleep researchers limit their definition of true dreaming to that which occurs in REM sleep. As a result, this chapter will mainly focus on REM sleep and the dreams that emerge from this state. We will, however, still explore dreaming at these other moments of sleep, as those dreams too offer important insights into the process itself. Your brain on dreams. In the 1950s and 1960s, recordings using electrodes placed on the scalp gave scientists a general sense of the type of brainwave activity underpinning REM sleep. But we had to wait until the advent of brain imaging machines in the early 2000s before we could reconstruct glorious, three-dimensional visualizations of brain activity during REM sleep. It was worth the wait. Among other breakthroughs, the method and the results undermined the postulates of Sigmund Freud and his non-scientific theory of dreams as wish fulfillment, which had dominated psychiatry and psychology for an entire century. There were important virtues of Freud's theory, and we will discuss them in a moment, but there were deep and systemic flaws that led to a rejection of the theory by modern-day science. Our more informed neuroscientific view of REM sleep has since given rise to scientifically testable theories of how it is that we dream. For example, logical, illogical, visual, non-visual, emotional, non-emotional, and what it is that we dream about. For example, experiences from our recent waking lives, de novo experiences, and even gives the chance to nibble away at surely the most fascinating question in all of sleep science, and arguably science writ large, why it is that we dream, that is, the functions of REM sleep dreaming. To appreciate the advance that brain scanners made to our understanding of REM sleep and dreaming beyond simple EEG recordings, we can return to our sports stadium analogy from Chapter 3. Dangling a microphone over the stadium can measure the summed activity of the entire crowd, but it is geographically non-specific in this regard. You cannot determine whether one segment of the crowd in the stadium is chanting loudly, while the segment directly next door is relatively less vocal, or even completely silent. The same non-specificity is true when measuring brain activity with an electrode placed on the scalp. However, magnetic resonance imaging, MRI scans, do not suffer this same spatial smearing effect in quantifying brain activity. MRI scanners effectively carve up the stadium, the brain, into thousands of small, discrete boxes, rather like individual pixels on a screen, and then measure the local activity of the crowd, brain cells, within that specific pixel, distinct from other pixels in other parts of the stadium. Furthermore, MRI scanners map this activity in three dimensions, covering all levels of the stadium brain, lower, middle, upper. By placing individuals inside brain scanning machines, I and many other scientists have been able to observe the startling changes in brain activity that occur when people enter into REM sleep and begin dreaming. For the first time, we could see how even the very deepest structures previously hidden from view came alive as REM sleep and dreaming got underway. During dreamless, deep NREM sleep, overall metabolic activity shows a modest decrease relative to that measured from an individual while they are resting but awake. However, something very different happens as the individual transitions into REM sleep and begins to dream. Numerous parts of the brain light up on the MRI scan as REM sleep takes hold, indicating a sharp increase in underlying activity. In fact, there are four main clusters of the brain that spike in activity when someone starts dreaming in REM sleep. 1. The visuospatial regions at the back of the brain, which enable complex visual perception. 2. The motor cortex, which instigates movement. 3. The hippocampus and surrounding regions that we have spoken about before, which support your autobiographical memory. And 4. The deep emotional centers of the brain, the amygdala and the cingulate cortex, a ribbon of tissue that sits above the amygdala and lines the inner surface of your brain, both of which help generate and process emotions. Indeed, these emotional regions of the brain are up to 30% more active in REM sleep compared to when we are awake. Since REM sleep is associated with the active, conscious experience of dreaming, it was perhaps predictable that REM sleep would involve a similarly enthusiastic pattern of increased brain activity. What came as a surprise, however, was a pronounced deactivation of other brain regions, specifically circumscribed regions of the far left and right sides of the prefrontal cortex. To find this area, take your hands and place them at the side corners of the front of your head, about 2 inches above the corners of your eyes. Think of the crowd's universal hand placement when a player just misses scoring a goal during overtime in a World Cup soccer game. These are the regions that became icy blue color scheme blobs on the brain scans, informing us that these neural territories had become markedly suppressed in activity during the otherwise highly active state of REM sleep. Discussed in Chapter 7, the prefrontal cortex acts like the CEO of the brain. This region, especially the left and right sides, manages rational thought and logical decision-making, sending top-down instructions to your more primitive deep brain centers, such as those instigating emotions. And it is this CEO region of your brain, which otherwise maintains your cognitive capacity for ordered, logical thought, that is temporarily ousted each time you enter into the dreaming state of REM sleep. REM sleep can therefore be considered as a state characterized by strong activation in visual, motor, emotional, and autobiographical memory regions of the brain, yet a relative deactivation in regions that control rational thought. Finally, thanks to MRI, we had our first scientifically grounded, whole-brain visualization of the brain in REM sleep. Coarse and rudimentary as the method was, we entered a new era of understanding the why and the how of REM sleep dreaming, without relying on idiosyncratic rules or opaque explanations of past dream theories, such as Freud's. We could make simple scientific predictions that could be falsified or supported. For example, after having measured the pattern of brain activity of an individual in REM sleep, we could wake them up and obtain a dream report. But even without that dream report, we should be able to read the brain scans and accurately predict the nature of that person's dream before they report it to us. If there was minimal motor activity, but a lot of visual and emotional brain activity, then the particular dream should have little movement, but be filled with visual objects and scenes and contain strong emotions, and vice versa. We have conducted just such an experiment, and the findings were so. We could predict with confidence the form of someone's dream. Would it be visual? Would it be motoric? Would it be awash with emotion? Would it be completely irrational and bizarre? Before the dreamers themselves reported their dream experience to the research assistant. As revolutionary as it was to predict the general form of someone's dream, emotional, visual, motoric, etc., it left a more fundamental question unanswered. Can we predict the content of someone's dream? That is, can we predict what an individual is dreaming about? For example, a car, a woman, food. Rather than just the nature of the dream. For example, is it visual? In 2013, a research team in Japan, led by Dr. Yakiyasu Kametani, at the Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute International in Kyoto, found an ingenious way to address the question. They essentially cracked the code of an individual's dream for the very first time, and, in doing so, led us to an ethically uncomfortable place. Individuals in the experiment consented to the study, an important fact, as we shall see. The results remain preliminary, since they were obtained in just 3 individuals, but they were highly significant. Also, the researchers focused on the short dreams we all frequently have just at the moment when we are falling asleep, rather than the dreams of REM sleep, though the method will soon be applied to REM sleep. The scientists placed each participant into an MRI scanner numerous times over the course of several days. Every time the participant fell asleep, the researchers would wait for a short while as they recorded the brain activity, and then wake the person up and obtain a dream report. Then they would let the person fall back to sleep and repeat the procedure. The researchers continued to do this until they had gathered hundreds of dream reports and corresponding snapshots of brain activity from their participants. An example of one of the dream reports was, "I saw a big bronze statue on a small hill, and below the hill there were houses, streets, and trees." Kametani and his team then distilled all of the dream reports down into 20 core content categories that were most frequent in the dreams of these individuals, such as books, cars, furniture, computers, men, women, and food, to obtain some kind of ground truth of what participants' brain activity looked like when they actually perceived these types of visual images while awake. The researchers selected real photographs that represented each category, relevant pictures of cars, men, women, furniture, etc. Participants were then placed back inside the MRI scanner and shown these images while awake as the researchers measured their brain activity again. Then, using these patterns of waking brain activity as a truth template of sorts, Kametani went pattern matching in the sea of sleeping brain activity. The concept is somewhat like DNA matching at a crime scene. The forensics team obtains a small sample of the victim's DNA that they use as a template, then go in search of a specific match from among the myriad possible samples. The scientists were able to predict with significant accuracy the content of participants' dreams at any one moment in time using just the MRI scans, operating completely blind to the dream reports of the participants. Using the template data from the MRI images, they could tell if you were dreaming of a man or a woman, a dog or a bed, flowers or a knife. They were, in effect, mind reading, or should I say, dream reading. The scientists had turned the MRI machine into a very expensive version of the beautiful handmade dream catchers that some Native American cultures will hang above their beds in the hopes of ensnaring the dream. And they had succeeded. The method is far from perfect. It cannot currently determine exactly what man, woman, or car the dreamer is seeing. For example, a recent dream of my own shamelessly featured a stunning 1960s vintage Aston Martin DB4 though you'd never be able to determine that degree of specificity from MRI scans, should I have been a participant in the experiment. You would simply know that I was dreaming of a car, rather than, say, a computer or piece of furniture, but not which car it was. Nevertheless, it is a remarkable advance